I was an extreme example of self-will run riot. Me not having a belief in anything bigger than myself, no God in my life, and not only just no God, you know, I mean, I have thousands of dollars of the devil tattooed on me in my rebellion against God. I was somebody who not only just didn't have a God, but I was very against the idea of a God.
You hated a God that didn't exist.
I hated a God that didn't exist, absolutely. Absolutely.
Welcome to There Is Hope. The advice or counsel given is provided for informational purposes only. Your host for There Is Hope, Richard Dover.
Today we're talking to a friend that is named Bobby, and he's in Seattle. I'm in Arkansas. What we're going to do is we're going to talk a little bit about Bobby's story, and we'll see how far we get before we get into the kind of the political side of things. And it'll start to make sense why we want to talk a little bit about politics. This recording is being done right after our presidential election. We still do not know who is the president of the United States for starting 2021. But Bobby, what we do know is we know that God changed your life. Would that be accurate?
That's about as accurate as it gets.
So why don't we talk a little bit about your life and kind of where you started in life and where you're at now, and kind of give us a kind of a summary of that. And that could probably take three or four interviews, so we'll see how we get through that and get people an idea. I guess I want to mention you're going to be talking about kind of the presidential election and what may be taking place, how we kind of see things. Is Bobby is coming from a totally different perspective than he would have had years ago, and so I thought it would be good for you to hear where he's coming from, not as a guy that is your anti-conservative guy, but somebody who came from a different background.
So, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I grew up pretty normal. I grew up in a small town in California, grew up with two loving parents. You know, they got divorced or whatever. But the thing about it was that I was always loved. You know, we had no religious views. You know, I had never been to church. They never took me to church. Talk of God, I think, that ever came about. I kind of remember going into my parents' room in the middle of the night. I had a nightmare that they were dying, and so I think that they kind of were trying to just put me at ease to say that, oh, we're going to heaven and all this stuff. But that was about the extent of my belief in God. I grew up very into math and science. I really looked down on anybody who had a belief in sort of any sort of higher power. I was fully bent that, you know, there was no meaning to life, and that there was no you know, purpose, that it just, we just, the Big Bang happened, and, you know, we are who we are, and you know, life was pretty much futile. And
so you just live the best you can, because this is the best you're going to get, and whatever happens, happens, and there is no afterlife or anything like that. Is that correct?
Well, yeah, but I think the big difference in between me and probably a lot of other millennials is that I didn't live to the best that I could. I had no desire to live the best that I could. I wanted to just have the most fun, and I didn't care about consequences.
Okay, let's stop there for a second, because you said different than many millennials. So why don't you talk a little bit about that, because some people think, well, millennials are irresponsible and all this stuff, but talk about some of the things that's the positive side of millennials.
Well, I think, I mean, again, these are all such loaded questions. So
yeah, stereotypes and everything else that's with it.
And I can only speak for the people that I know, and, you know, I mean, which are in the thousands. You know, I mean, I've came across thousands of people who are my age throughout my life. In my experience, in which would make up Southern California and Northern Nevada, and Southern Nevada too, but with millennials, it was, I think, what is called false idols, worshiping false idols. We cared about money. We cared about actors and actresses. We cared about sports figures. We loved people. The difference between me and other millennials, I think that there is an overall goodness to millennials. I think that they do have a general concern for the well-being of people. I think that their ideals, and that's kind of what I think that you see in this Black Lives Matter stuff and all these other little groups, and I think that they're looking to their, because of the lack of belief in a God and really a purpose, I think that there's an overwhelming thinking that, you know, people will be our solution, that, you know, if we just went to enough school, if we were just educated enough, if we just, you know, educated ourselves enough that, that we could solve this huge epidemic and of racism and stuff like that.
But then you were different, and you had no hope, no belief, or what was it with you that you went down a dark side?
Well, what I've learned is that I was an extreme example of self-will run riot. Me not having a belief in anything bigger than myself, no God in my life, and not only just no God, you know, I mean, I have thousands of dollars of the devil tattooed on me in my rebellion against God. So, yeah, I suppose that, I mean, that is quite important, is that I was somebody who not only just didn't have a God, but I was very against the idea of a God.
You hated a God that didn't exist.
I hated a God that didn't exist, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, I really miss the beauty of the forest because of a few bad trees. I like to use that example because those few bad trees, you know, what I saw was the Crusades or, you know, the Muslim wars and all this stuff. And I saw that what God was doing to these people.
You were focusing on the negative aspects that comes from religion and could not see the good aspects. Would that be accurate?
Absolutely, and that's exactly what I mean by missing the beauty of the forest by a few of its trees, because I focused on a couple of its trees.
Just stop there for a second. Did you understand that, for example, for America, and this I think maybe all over, but America, did you have any concept, did you understand the history of most of the universities were started by Christians, most of the hospitals were started by Christians, most of the relief programs started by Christians, even a lot of the addiction treatment programs started by Christians, that there was all the good that Christians have done in the world, and did you not see those things at all? Was you blind to those things, not aware of that? What was kind of going on?
That's actually a great point. I just didn't care. I mean, I knew this country was founded by Christians, and you know, I knew the history of America, that you know we fled for religious freedoms. And you know we were trying to get rid of the you know King George and the oppression that we were having in England, and that's what founded this country. But as far as that went, you know, it never clicked. It oh wait, these are all Christian based, you know. And through my time, I as you know, Rich, a lot of drug addiction in my past, and that's a huge that's the biggest part of my story here. You know, next to God. And my founding of a belief in God. But so I guess I just never thought about it. To answer your question, it was never.
But wouldn't it be convenient to think about it, right? I
mean, yeah, it wasn't
kind of
because
things up if you start thinking about that.
Of course, because you know my this is just so loaded. There's just so many different ways to go about this, but. Yes, there's no way that I would have given any credit or given any good to any sort of church or any sort of God or any sort of religion. It was we are people, and there's no meaning to life, and we get what we get, and that's it. That's all there is to it. So if I want a good job, I better just go get a good job. If I want to go to school, you know, if I want to shoot heroin, then that's what I'm going to do. And there's nothing. There's nobody I need to answer to. No authority, nothing, because life is meaningless. And so why would I ever want to, need to, or even be willing to, you know, give any ode to, like, God or the fundamental of anything else, you know, being based in Christianity.
Or even authority, then.
Yeah, even authority. You know, the government was bad, and, you know, I mean, that was just my belief. I mean, I had a big problem with authority, whether it, you know, it started young. You know, it started very young. I mean, I wouldn't do what my parents did. My parents have told me that I was, they were almost afraid of me because they wanted to be my friend more than, you know, and then that kind of nurtured that behavior. And I could see ways that, you know, if I needed to get what I wanted, if I wanted money or whatever, you know, their no's, no, you can't have this, you know, that never meant no. You know, there's that introducing that self-will again. You know, if I only impose my will enough on them, that they will give in and do that. And then, you know, that graduated to the cops, and I didn't care about the cops. I treated the cops very poorly, and I certainly wasn't going to abide by any law. And, you know, certainly not going to believe in a God or listen to a God who is going to tell me what to do, and I got to live a certain way, and I got to go to church and waste my Sundays at church and live a certain way, because it was just all about me. It was a very selfish way to live, and you know, I took a lot of people out living that way.
Now, what about there? I would say, so I was an atheist. I grew up as an atheist. You believe what you want to believe. I'll believe what I want to believe. And I grew up in an environment of performance orientation and perfectionism. So I went the opposite direction than you. I'm certainly not going to be a drug addict because I got to be perfect, and drug addicts aren't perfect. So I went a different direction. But I had a moral value. I grew up in a home with moral values. I think your home probably had some moral values. But what was your morality then? Because it sounds like there was not much of a moral structure in your life. Or I shouldn't say your parents had some moral structure, but for you, where does morality come in? Where does ethics come in?
I had no ethics. I had no morality. I could be honest, and it didn't matter. I didn't care who I hurt. I didn't have guilty feelings. And if I did, I wasn't just some like animal who doesn't feel anything, but I developed the ability to suppress any sort of guilt or suppress any sort of negative emotion, and it just got shoved down, and it was like, well, oh well, you know. And
or you went to drugs, you know.
Well,
drugs
that was
your addictions. I mean,
that was the thing for sure, was that gave me a wonderful ability to cope with the lack of morality and, you know, the lack of ethics. So I through that behavior and not having a God in my life, you know, ultimately that led to me hurting a lot of people in many, many different ways. But, you know, so drugs gave me an outlet. It was a temporary relief. And I had been blaming all sorts of other things, you know, for that drug use and, you know, my childhood and all this stuff. And, you know, that's kind of why
I
started.
The girlfriend that left you, it's her fault that she left you. That's why you're doing drugs.
Exactly. I was, but again, there's that false idols. I had put all that, I mean, my happiness was contingent on outside things. My happiness was contingent on the money in my bank, the girlfriend, the apartment, the whatever it was. I mean, how good my body looked, how healthy, you know, I could eat. You know, it was just, my happiness was completely contingent upon that. I lived a life of, if I only had this, then I'd be happy. And then when I would attain that, I wasn't happy. So here enters in more blame of, okay, well, it wasn't this, so it must be something else. So I guess that we'll wait to get into that, because I was going to get into the difference now is being that once I found God.
Yeah, we can't get there yet. That's
yeah. Yeah.
I know you want to get there. And we'll get there before the show ends. We will get there. People some hope. Because it don't sound very hopeful right now.
Yeah, for sure.
Like a guy that I would want to be a friend with, and it doesn't sound like a guy I wanted the next door neighbor. It didn't sound like a guy I'd want to work with, and yet there was the other side of you, though, because if you wanted to be a good guy, you could be a good guy. And a lot of people like you. I mean, even in your crazy times, there's people that liked you because there's a part of your personality that's likable, right?
Well, we'll get this.
Isn't that the crazy part, the dichotomy that was going on in your life?
Yes, but an absolute inability to see that because of the bad things I was doing. You know, I had developed this belief that there's no way anybody could want to be around me, you know, that they were using me, or, you know, they only wanted me for this, or they only wanted me for that. And I mean, because I felt so bad about myself, there is no way that I could ever see. And looking back today, you're exactly right. There was plenty of people that wanted to be around me. You know, there was plenty of people that thought I was a good person, and that, you know, and maybe I was for the most extent, but I certainly didn't feel like that inside.
And so, what about the fact that there could be people that could be, that it gave you favor in spite of you, that loved you in spite of you, that was there for you even when you weren't there for yourself, but it was very hard for you to be able to see any of that.
Tons of those people. I have friends today that I just have overwhelming gratitude toward. You know, there was plenty of girlfriends that stuck with me way longer than you know, because there was good sides to me. I mean, my parents, I mean, yourself is included in there. There's two dozen people who fit that in that category. But again, it doesn't matter because, or I mean, it didn't matter because of how I felt inside. I couldn't see it.
And you can't trust anybody.
And I definitely couldn't trust them. I mean, yeah.
Well, of course. Why? Why would you? Because you think everybody's like you.
Yep, absolutely.
Right?
Yep. Yep,
that even
absolutely.
If they're good, there's some ulterior motive because it's all self, right? As if it's all about me, 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 then everybody else is about me, me, me. Then anytime they're being nice or doing this or that, there it's a selfish reason.
Absolutely.
And so just take that, just go, because we're going to get short on time here. We've got to get some positive side. So just jump off of that. So then when you start to look at change in your life and there's people actually intervening for you, and then all of a sudden you start to open up to the concept that maybe there's a God that's on your side. That had to be a war that started going on within you, a battle that was happening.
Well, I don't know about a war. Oddly enough, so, you know, as you know, Ed sent me the train ticket, and you actually had a bed open in your recovery house. And I spent, I think I told you this, but I spent about, I think it took about a month for me to get up here for whatever reason. I don't know if it was an open bed or whatever reason why. But I had spent that month on disproving the Bible. I had YouTube videoed all this stuff about all sorts of stuff. And I was so full of myself. I really was hell-bent on coming up here and couldn't wait to talk to you and so I could present you all these facts about why the Bible's wrong and all this stuff.
Yeah, I remember when you say this, I remember that you came with your ammunition because you knew you were going into a faith-based recovery house.
My first ever
house.
Introduction to any sort of church.
Right, and so you got to have your ammunition when you come.
Sure, sure. And
you didn't know who you was dealing with, though.
Well, and then that's what happened.
And I'm joking about me, but and at the same time, you both know it wasn't me. It was actually God and the Holy Spirit who you're really battling with, and it really wasn't me. It was ultimately God that you're going to have to battle with, but of course, that wasn't your thinking at the time.
Absolutely not. And there's a huge importance of carrying the message, and so people like you are serve a vital role, and I think we'll get into that plenty later as well. Yeah, so, I mean, I came up here. I had no desire to quit using drugs. I just used this as an opportunity. I used Ed's money. That was only for so I could come up here because, again, if I only could get out of Nevada, then I would be happy. And I had burnt every bridge. My last resort, the one person, you know, those people who loved me and despised me was my mother. And after 30 years, even my mother said, enough's enough, you got to go. So I had nowhere to go. So by some miracle, I hadn't talked to Ed for, I don't know, 3 years. And he sends me a text message in my ultimate time of like need, says, hey, you know, come up here. Okay, great. Yep, great. Now I can get there and, you know, I'll just get a job, get some money, move out, and then I can continue on the way I was.
Work the system happened. Work the system to give it you want and then off to your other little project.
Yeah. I just needed to get myself back on my feet, which I was very good at. You know, I'd burn my life to the ground over and over, and then, you know, I would move back in with my mom, you know, get a little money, get my driver's license back, whatever, get myself back on my feet, move out, and then, you know,
now,
burn my life
talk about
to the
that
ground
for
again.
Just talk for that for just a second. That was one of the biggest hindrances probably for you to be able to get your life in order is because you could get back on your feet.
Yeah, I had, absolutely. I knew it was always in the back of my head. I could always, I could make good, quick money, you know, I mean, for whatever reason, you know, tips are good in the restaurant industry. So, you know, if I needed $1,000 to make a down payment on a house or whatever, you know, I'd move back in with mom. And that was just a recycle that I repeated over and over. And yes, I mean, I had the ability. I could manipulate and I could put on a good face and I could dress up. I could clean up real nice and, you know, I could hide all the track marks and I managed the ability to not drink for a month or two, you know, at a time, so I could get myself back on my feet.
Well, then you can be a very hard worker and put all your into it, and then people like you. And so then when you start to be the old guy all over again and you start to go down the road of addiction and everything else, is, well, if I just work hard enough, they'll put up with it. And that worked for you for how many times?
50 times. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was my life. Yep.
Okay, so now this turn around, we're going to run out of time here. So this go into you move into the house, and we'll pick up more into more details. But obviously, something changed. The reason we're talking on the phone is because you did have an encounter with God. So you want to kind of, as we end today's show, do you want to kind of hit into that? What happened to suddenly get Bobby to a place where he can talk about God now, and more than talk about it, share Jesus with others?
Sure, absolutely.
And you only have a few minutes, and so it's going to be hard. we'll jump into it the next show. We'll get into more of the details because, there's some amazing stories in the midst of all that.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. So, okay, so if I have to sum it up here, one, I can say at the time I had no idea what was happening. I didn't. I was there, and again, my whole mindset was just, okay, I got to appease Rich. I mean, I remember even going to the store to buy, I knew you were at Bible study or you were practicing at the church, so I thought I'd bring some cookies by. That was just to gain favor, right? That was just the way that I manipulated people. Despite my motives, the actions were good, you know? And then, you know, Rich, you said, Bobby, that was so great for you doing this. God was showing you favor. And it was like, your rent's covered this month or whatever. So that was kind of and it was kind of that stuff all over. And then I was watching you because I was ready to just tear you down. And I was watching the way you lived your life. And I couldn't see any, I could see flaws in character, of course, we're human, but I you backed up what you were saying. So you were living a life that ultimately I could see your happiness.
But at the same time, I have flawed characters and personality traits that are pretty bad at times. why didn't you pick up on that stuff? I mean, again, when people attack me, they say, you don't have to attack me. I can give you the list instead of taking all your time. I'll just give you the book I have of my story of my life. And there's plenty to find the flaws. What kept you from focusing on the flaws?
Well, I could relate to you. This is coming from a whole different perspective, but looking back, the best way I could answer that is because I could relate to you. I knew deep down I had some character flaws. I could relate, I could see a lot of you in me. And as well, there's also that need for survival, right? Because I knew if I didn't put up with this, I'm in the middle of a city that I don't know.
Right.
And it's the dead of winter. And I don't have any money, and I can't go anywhere. So it was a little of both and both. I think it started off definitely as, well, I better get my act together, you know, because I knew how to survive. I knew, like what you were talking about, work, that's what I was doing. But over the, you know, with that, I could see the presence of God. I was feeling better in a way that I was feeling better. I was giving away my money because you said that, hey, try this. And I think I was just finally willing to try some stuff, and I was willing to say, okay, let's see. So, you know, I'd get on the train, and I'd go down to work an hour early, and I would look for people to give my money to. I would buy cops donuts and breakfast and stuff like that, and that's what I did before work. And that kind of behavior was having an impact on me. Gradual, slow, nothing dramatic, nothing crazy. And I think the biggest overall thing that really had an impact on me was you did an altar call one time, and you asked if anybody wants to be forgiven. I didn't even know I needed to be forgiven for anything. I was always great to apologize. I could always say, oh, sorry for doing that. But there was still this a lot of guilt I was carrying around. And I came and I did an altar call. I was incredibly embarrassed. I don't know why I did it. I was new. I hadn't been there maybe a month or two. And you put your hands on me and prayed, and I just started bawling. I don't know if you remember that, but I mean, I just started crying like a baby right there in the middle of like this house I thought was full of convicts, you know, so I went in there with, you know, I'm very, you know, being in jail forever, you know, I thought I had to be real hard and the house wasn't really like that, but you know, it's not, so I just couldn't control it. I just started bawling. And I think that was like my big spiritual awakening, you know, and then after that, there was a weight lifted off my shoulders. And then I was much more eager to listen.
Yeah, there was an openness to listen then, to instead of coming with the ammunition to come against, it's maybe I should have an open ear to hear.
I let my guard down.
and you let your guard down. Of course, when you let your guard down, what happened is that gave permission for God to jump in, and that's the rest of the story that we're not going to get to. But one of the things I think for me is that I seen somebody who was hungry, and you know me, if there's somebody that's hungry, I'll feed. So I said, here's somebody that's hungry to get some kind of, you know, something about God and spirituality, all that stuff. And so there was just a hunger that you had. And when you have that hunger, you know, that again gives God permission to jump in. And you became, and we'll kind of end it here, you became a spiritual seeker. And absolutely. I believe when somebody becomes a spiritual seeker, that just opens up to, you know, a tremendous door for the Holy Spirit to jump in, and he's given permission. You're seeking. You don't know what you're seeking. As some kind of spirituality of some sort. And I would say the good news for you is that you weren't in some other kind of house with some other kind of thing going on, and you grabbed onto something that you could have grabbed onto something very dark instead of onto Christ. And so, you know, God had you at the right place at the right time. Well, we're going to have to wrap up this show, and I just wanted to tell our listeners that there is hope. If you have a loved one that sounds like anything close to what Bobby's like, tell you that talk to Bobby's family, and they would tell you he's totally a different person. They would never have thought he would be the person that he has become. And we'll get more into that into the next show. And then we're going to do is in the next show talk a little bit more about his conversion story. Then we're going to get into his change when it comes to how he sees police, how he sees the government, how he sees politics. Just a change took place. And we're going to talk more about why, how that took place. I don't think, Bobby, as we finish here, I don't think anybody sat you down and said, this is how you're to vote, this is how you're to believe, and this is how you're to think. Did that ever happen?
Definitely not.
Definitely not. It wouldn't have worked, would it?
No, you tell me to do something, I'm not going to do it.
Well, I know that, too, because even after Bobby's conversion, we won't say it was all perfect, and we've had our conflicts and some pretty big conflicts at one time. So it hasn't been a perfect journey. It never is. Today I was talking to somebody, and they said, you know, we need to be careful that we don't think of ourselves better than others. And I said, well, that's simple, because if you understand that you fall short, you can never be better than somebody else, because we all fall short. And so we all have the same problem, as we have a sinful nature that we war with all the time. And some of us just choose to make better choices at times by the God's grace, but if we make the bad choices, we'll be right back to where we were, if not worse. So it has nothing to do with how good we are, it's how good God is. And the Lord love Bobby, and if you're going through your struggle and you wonder if God can forgive you, you can get right with God. Maybe you've known Jesus before and you walked away. I want you to know that there's nothing that God holds against you, that he's on your side, that his mercy and his grace is there. All it is a matter of is calling out to it, just as Bobby realized they call out to God, that his whole life transformed and changed, and he didn't even know what all that meant. To tell him to call out to God and your life would be transformed, he had no idea what that was about, and God did it in spite of him, and so he can do it for you too. So Bobby, as we've shared here that there is hope and shared your story, is there a way somebody can get a hold of you if they feel connected to what you're saying and you've kind of touched their heart? Do you feel comfortable giving out your contact info?
Absolutely. I have an email address. It's robertlangdon2424@gmail.com. robertlangdon2424@gmail.com. Reach out anytime. I'm happy to hear from you.
All right. Great. Thank you, Bobby, for sharing that. Our show is called There's Hope, that through Jesus Christ we can have hope, that he will give us the strength when we have no strength. God is on our side, that he's for you, he's not against you, no matter what you've done, no matter where you've been, no matter whatever dot life you've had, no matter what actions you've ever taken in life, that there's a God that loves you, that cares for you. So I want us to end the show to let you know there is hope. If you need someone to talk to, I want you to know that we're available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. You can call a phone number, it's a toll-free number. It's 1-866-1-GOD. Real easy to remember. 1-866-WANTGOD, 1-866-1-GOD. You can call 24 hours a day at any point in time. We'll pray with you. We'll talk with you. We'll do anything that we can to be of help to you, to help you to be able to make it through whatever you're going through.